Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the briefing. The Secretary General spoke by telephone with the President of Somalia regarding today's attack in the capital, Mogadishu. The Secretary General said he was deeply concerned and outraged by the despicable attack against the United Nations and added his own personal condolences to the families of the deceased. He urged the President to ensure UN staff are protected and to coordinate closely with the African Union mission in Somalia and his special representative. The Secretary General said the United Nations would not be deterred from delivering its mandate. As you will have seen this morning, the Deputy Secretary General began his remarks to the Security Council by saying that he was greatly saddened and shocked by the outrageous attack in Mogadishu. The full details are still emerging, but we know that several people have died. For his part, the Secretary General's Special Representative, Nicholas Kay, called the attack an act of blatant terrorism and desperate attack to knock Somalia off its path of recovery and peace building, adding that reports of casualties are still being verified. The Special Representative said that while colleagues in Mogadishu are shaken, the United Nations remains determined to stand by the people of Somalia. The Secretary General had a series of meetings with the new Chinese leadership in Beijing today, including with President Xi Jinping. We issued a readout with details on the meeting, as well as his meetings with the Foreign Minister Wang Yi and the Chief of General Staff General Fang Fenghui. In his meetings, the Secretary General emphasized the important role of China in the United Nations, notably in peacekeeping operations. He also discussed a wide range of topics, particularly developments in Syria and the Korean Peninsula. Earlier in the day, the Secretary General visited China's peacekeeping training center near Beijing and spoke by video link with Chinese peacekeepers based in South Sudan. The Secretary General also met UN staff and the UN country team and held talks with the President of the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, Wang Weigang. On Thursday, the Secretary General has further meetings with Chinese leaders, including Premier Li Keqiang. He will also have meetings related to energy and climate change. The Deputy Secretary General addressed the Security Council's open meeting on conflict prevention and natural resources. He told this council that in too many countries, a wealth of resources fails to translate into equivalent wealth for the people. The result of this injustice is bitterness, mistrust, and alienation. He said that the primary responsibility for preventing conflict and transparently and equitably managing resources lies with governments. Ultimately, all parties need to recognize and act upon the links between poverty, inequality, conflict, and sustainable development. The Council also heard from Kofi Annan in his capacity as chair of the Africa Progress Panel and from senior World Bank and UN Development Program officials. A UN interagency team visited Al-Qusair in Syria on the 15th of June to assess the humanitarian situation there. The mission observed large-scale destruction, including to health facilities, housing, and schools. There was also no water or power supply. Most civilians have fled to neighboring areas as well as to homes in Damascus. The humanitarian team noted that restoring basic services and rehabilitating damaged infrastructure would likely be a long-term undertaking. Meanwhile, in the last 2 weeks, the World Food Program has dispatched food rations to help 900,000 Syrians, including many who were displaced by the situation in Al-Qusair and Kenitra. The World Health Organization has provided emergency health kits for over 40,000 people in homes, while generators and water cleaning materials have been provided to allow for a safe water supply for 1.6 million people in homes, Hama, Tartus, and Damascus. The High Commissioner for Human Rights today urged the government of Myanmar to devote urgent attention to tackling the continuing discrimination against ethnic and religious minorities in the country, warning that failure to act could undermine the reform process. Navi Pillay said that Myanmar today can act as a source of inspiration by showing how governments can be transformed by a renewed commitment to human rights. However, the High Commissioner said the human rights violations against the Rohingya community in Rakhine State and the spread of anti-Muslim sentiment across the state and beyond is threatening the reform process and requires focused attention from the government. The president of Myanmar has made some important statements on the need to end discrimination and violence and foster mutual respect and tolerance between people of different faiths and ethnicities, and Ms. Pillay encouraged the government to translate political will into concrete actions. Her full statement is available on the website of the UN Human Rights Office. In a report released today, the UN Refugee Agency says that more people are refugees or internally displaced than any other time since 1994, with the crisis in Syria having emerged as a major new factor in global displacement. The agency's annual Global Trends report shows that, as of the end of last year, more than 45.2 million people were in situations of displacement compared to 42.5 million people at the end of 2011. This includes 15.4 million refugees, 937,000 asylum seekers, and 28.8 million people forced to flee within the borders of their countries. About 55% of all refugees come from five war-affected countries: Afghanistan, Somalia, Iraq, Syria, and Sudan. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Antonio Guterres, said that these numbers are alarming and reflect the difficulties of the international community in preventing conflicts and promoting timely solutions for them. There are more details available on the UN Refugees Agency's website. Questions, please. Nizar?
Yeah. Right. Regarding Al-Qusair, while this visit of the Red Cross to the town, did they find any evidence of massacres that took place? What happened to those who were injured in the fighting? Did they establish the facts about them?
Well, we'll have to find out. The information I have right now is what I read out. We'll see what else they report.
Another matter, the Interior Minister of Lebanon today complained about some parties are recruiting from the refugees, the Syrian refugees, training them in camps and probably using them internally. Does the Secretary General has any opinion about such practices?
Well, the Secretary General has said that the situation in Syria is causing ripples beyond its borders and that any attempt to further militarize the situation is completely unhelpful, and that continues to be his position. Masoud?
On this talks between the Taliban, United States, and Afghanistan, which have now been torpedoed by Mr. Karzai's non-participation, can the United Nations, in this case, play any role, helpful role, to bring about these talks, which are now, it seems, in limbo?
Well, the UN maintains that long-term peace in Afghanistan can only be achieved through a political process. That's been our position all along, and it continues to be our position. The UN remains committed to an Afghan-led and Afghan-owned process in accordance with UN mandate. The UN mission UNAMA stands ready to support Afghan-led, Afghan-owned peace and reconciliation efforts in full accordance with its mandate. Joe?
Yeah, this is really just follow-up to my questions yesterday. You indicated you were going to try to see if you can get more information. The first question was whether the Secretary General, while in China, had participated in meetings involving the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. There was a UN committee there hosted by Beijing. And second, whether if you were able to find out if the Secretary General had been invited or had requested attendance at the G8 summit, considering, it's my understanding, that the heads of the IMF and World Bank were there, and Syria was a major topic of discussion.
On the first question, the Secretary General did not attend the conference in Beijing. He was represented by Oscar Fernandez Terranco, who read a statement to the meeting. And on the second question, I'll still try and find out. I haven't got any information back yet. Pamela?
Thank you, Eduardo. On Mogadishu, you had your initial comment. Is the Secretary General looking to follow up on anything in terms of protecting UN staff in the future in this setting?
Well, we don't discuss security in public. He has been in conversations. As I said, he spoke with the president of Somalia this morning. We were very as far as one can be pleased with the rapid response of Somali security forces and Amazon and African Union forces response quickly. They responded quickly. So in that sense, we were very pleased with that, but we're not going to get any further into security.
No, but issues. Just to follow up, taking additional security measures to protect UN staff, generally speaking?
Well, security is always under review by the United Nations. We take the security of our staff extremely seriously. And I'm sure in the coming days, a lot of thought will be given to what the security situation is, not only in Somalia, but around the world. It's something that's an ongoing process from our security people, but that's as far as I want to go. All the way in the back.
Thank you. President Putin and President Obama are expected to talk about nuclear issue and possible cuts in nuclear arsenals in these two countries. Any statement, any reflection on part of the Secretary General?
Well, the Secretary General is always pleased when leaders decide to discuss disarmament and discuss the reduction of nuclear arsenals. We don't have any specific statement, but I think that that's a general principle we can follow. Matthew.
Sure. Thanks, Eduardo. I wanted to ask you, you know, there was a briefing here earlier this morning by Watchlist and World Vision, and this question of both groups said that they don't believe that a country that's listed as a child soldier recruiter, i.e. Chad, should be in MINUSMA. But Watchlist went beyond that and said that, according to their information, in mid-April 2013, Chadian troops kept children under detention and questioned them for several weeks before turning them over. So I wanted to know first, you know, if there is, I know that there's been any DPKO or UN response to these two respected NGOs saying that as a matter of principle, a recruiter shouldn't be in a mission. And also, if DPKO was aware of this information, that at least I wasn't until this today, that the Chadian troops had detained children. And if so, when were they going to make that public, or what do they say to the idea of turning blue-hatting this force into MINUSMA?
Well, the Secretary General's Special Representative for Children and Armed Conflict visited Chad. Mm-hmm. In May of 2013, followed by a visit by the military advisor this month, together with a UNICEF representative. They discussed with the Chadian authorities, among other things, short-term measures to be implemented by October 31st, 2013, with the grace period for AFISMA troop contributors to comply with United Nations standards. Chadian authorities expressed their commitment to ensure that no children are present among the troops to be contributed to MINUSMA and are undertaking a number of measures to that effect. In particular, steps are underway to systematize training on the issue of child recruitment, to establish a network of focal points in each military region, and to organize an age verification workshop. DPKO is working closely with the Special Representative of the Secretary General on Children and Armed Conflict and UNICEF in close consultation with Chadian authorities to put in place immediate mechanisms to ensure that there are no children in the contingent it contributes to MINUSMA and that their troops are trained in child protection. AFISMA troops, including the Chadians, will be re-hatted as MINUSMA Blue Helmets as on July 1st. But they will be subject to a grace period of 4 months during which they will be expected to meet UN standards, both on technical issues and on this question of child recruitment. Chad is listed in the Secretary General's Children and Armed Conflict Report for Recruitment and Use and signed an action plan in June 2011 with the UN, which put in place long-term measures to end this violation and enable Chad to be delisted. The United Nations stands ready to work closely with the government of Chad to ensure a full implementation of the action plan beyond the short-term measures and after the four-month grace period.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. I just want to make sure that if it's possible to get a response to whether DPKO or the UN system otherwise was aware of this allegation that the ones currently in Mali had detained children for several weeks and questions.
Well, as DPKO, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very
much.
Can I
ask another question?
One more question, last question.
All right, this has to do with that Mr. Mitri has done a couple of briefings and they've been very useful, but I wanted to get he can't answer for UN women, maybe you can, or there seems to be some concern among women in Libya about the constitution process and about this quota that's existed until now, 35% women being done away with. And it seemed to, they met with Mr. Mitri and some of them have said he was somewhat dismissive of this, he's answered, but they also say that UN Women promised to give them the Secretary General's email so they could write to him, promised to come to a meeting on May 30th and didn't, and I'm just wondering, does the UN system have any position on steps that should be taken in Libya to ensure continued participation of women as the country makes a new constitution?
Well, in principle, I think you'll know that the Secretary General has always been a very strong promoter of the role of women in public life, and that is something that he stands by. On the specific question of Libya, we'll check with DPA and get back to you on
that. Okay.
Thank you. Have a good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.